Will they ever be able to live the way I wanted Amanda and me to live? Amanda. The thought of her sapped all the strength from him. At least, she will be safe, Fuchs thought.
Yes,
came a mocking voice from within his mind.
She'll be quite safe, once she's married Humphreys.
The old anger surged for a moment, but it faded away, replaced with the hopelessness of his situation.
He's won her, and I've lost,
he knew. As they stepped through the airlock and into the reception area, Fuchs saw a group of four women and three men waiting for him. He recognized them all. Former neighbors, former friends. We'll take him from here, said Joyce Taccamini, her gaunt, pinched face blankly expressionless. She would not look Fuchs in the eyes.
Take him where? Harbin demanded.
He's under house arrest, Taccamini replied stiffly, pending the return of our chief administrator. He's going to stand trial for piracy and murder.
Harbin nodded his agreement and allowed them to lead Fuchs away. It's finished, he told himself. I've done my job. Now for the rewards. He led his two men to the Humphreys' office, only a short walk through the dusty tunnel. There, a smiling young woman got up from her metal desk and personally escorted the trio to quarters deeper inside the warren of tunnels and cubicles. The two men had to share one room. Harbin got a private apartment. It was still just one room, but it was his alone. Someone had even brought his travel bag and placed it on the bed. A message from Diane was waiting for him. She should have looked happy. Jubilant, Harbin thought, rejoicing in their victory, his triumph. Instead, her face looked serious, almost grave in the wall screen image.
Doric, I've set up a high-G flight for you. I want you here at Cellini as soon as you can get here. Now that you've taken Fuchs, there's a lot we have to do, a lot of changes in both our lives. I'll tell you all about it when you get here.
The screen went blank. Harbin stared at it for a few moments, thinking. Not a word of congratulations. Not a syllable of warmth. Well, she's never said she loves me.
He went to the bed and sat on it, suddenly tired. I never expected love, he told himself. Then he realized. Not until now.
He opened his travel bag and searched through it for the pills that would bring him peace. At least for a little while.
Humphreys spent the morning making arrangements for his wedding. He had his legal department send a notice of Amanda's divorce suit to Fuchs at Ceres. That ought to put the icing on his cake, he thought delightedly. Maybe he'll commit suicide once he gets the news and spare us all the trouble of putting him on trial. Then he decided to buy the Hotel Luna and refurbish it so it would look properly gleaming for his wedding. It won't be a big affair, he thought, just a few dozen friends. And the most important of my business associates, of course. It's got to be first class all the way. What was that old word the English used long ago? Posh, that's it. I want this wedding to be small, intimate, and very posh. Amanda will probably invite Pancho, he realized. So what? I wonder how much family she has back on Earth. I'll bring them all up here. Why not? I'm going to shower her with so much kindness and luxury that she'll fall in love with me whether she wants to or not. By lunchtime, he was still grinning and whistling to himself. He ate at his desk, casually running down the past 2 days of activities reports. He stopped when he saw that Diane had authorized a high-energy flight to Ceres. The only passengers aboard the vessel were Ambrose and Dr. Cardenas. Why would she do that, he wondered. And then he remembered. She went through the implantation procedure yesterday, and she still got up and ordered a special flight for those two rock rats? His mood only slightly dimmed. He called for Vord on the phone. I'm going to take a stroll through the garden, he said when her image appeared on the wall screen. Are you up to joining me? I'm trying to catch up on what I missed yesterday, she said guardedly. That can wait. A walk in the fresh air will be good for you. She hesitated a fraction of a second, then capitulated. With a nod, she said, I'll meet you at your front door. He expected that she would show some strain from the procedure she'd been through, But to Humphreys's eye, Diane Favord looked no different than before the implantation. "The procedure went well?" he asked as they stepped along the brick path that wound through the lushly thick bushes of coral pink oleanders and scarlet azaleas. She gave him a sidelong glance. "The report should be on file." "I've seen the report," he replied testily. "I want to know how you feel." "Oh," said Favord. "Concern for the mother of your son?" "That's right." She stayed silent for a few steps, then said at last, "I'm fine. Mother and fetus in good condition." "Good. By the way, let me offer my congratulations." He couldn't help breaking into a smile. "About Amanda?" "Thank you." They passed a little bench of lunar stone. Favord asked, "Now that you'll be able to make a baby the old-fashioned way, do you still want me to go to term?" "Of course I do," he snapped. "That's my son you're talking about." "Your clone." "I wouldn't have you abort him. I can have more than one child." "But this one," she patted her stomach lightly, "carries your genes and nobody else's."
"Damned right."
"He won't be exactly like you, you know," Favord said, a teasing smile playing across her lips. "Genetically, he'll be identical, but he'll be affected by the enzymes of my body, and..."
"I know all that," Humphreys interrupted.
"I'm sure you do." He glared at her.
"You're downright sassy today, aren't you?"
"And why shouldn't I be, Martin? I'm carrying your child. You're going to reward me very handsomely for that, aren't you?"
"If the boy is healthy when he's born."
"No, I don't want to wait until then. I want my payoff now. I want a seat on the board of directors. I've earned it, and I'll be a lot better at it than most of those fossils." Power, Humphreys thought. She's after power. Aloud, he asked, "Is that all?"
"I want money, too. I want a lot of money, Martin. I know you can afford it."
He stopped walking and planted his fists on his hips. "Since when do you call me by my given name?" She smiled saucily. "I'm taking a very large risk for this fetus of yours. I think that works out to a first-name relationship, don't you?"
"No, I don't."
"Very well, then. We'll keep everything strictly on a business level, Mr. Humphreys. I want $10 million a year for life." He barked out a bitter laugh.
"You're dreaming. I could get 100 women to do what you're doing, and it wouldn't cost me a fraction of that."
Favord began walking along the brick path again, slowly. Humphreys had no choice but to follow her. "Yes, I'm sure you could buy a surrogate mother for your clone on the cheap. But I'm worth $10 million. Even more, in fact."
"Are you?" he asked sullenly, realizing now where she was heading.
"I know a lot about you, about what you've done in the belt. I've been a faithful employee, Mr. Humphreys, and I've kept my mouth shut. But continued silence will cost you $10 million per year. You can set up a trust fund. I'll handle the details for you." Strangely, Humphreys felt no anger. He almost admired her audacity.
"So, it's come to this," he said.
"Yes, it has." With a slow, disappointed shake of his head, Humphreys said, "I was afraid you'd get delusions of grandeur. This isn't the first time an employee of mine has tried to extort money from me." "Don't you think I'm worth $10 million per year?" she asked, rank impudence on her smiling lips. Before he could think of an appropriate reply, Favord added, "And don't think you can conveniently get rid of me. I'm not going to have an accident, Martin. I have a very good insurance policy against accidents of all kinds." Then it dawned on him. "So that's why you're rushing Harbin back here." She nodded. "Doric's my insurance policy. If you attempt any violence against me, he'll kill you. He's good at it. Ask Grigor. Grigor is terrified of him."
"Is he?"
"Yes, and for good reason. You should be terrified of him, too, if you think you can get rid of me. It's cheaper to pay the $10 million, Martin.
That covers both of us, Doric and